Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Joining me today is an old young friend of mine, Dr. Jacob DeCesar from DeCesar Orthopedic Medicine. We're so happy to have him on the show today. He's a wonderful sports medicine physician located in Greensburg. And we're going to talk today a little bit about that fall sports season. It's that time of year where kids are almost heading back to school. They're getting ready to join those fall sports. And we know all kinds of injuries can happen. So we thought, let's get a clue in with Jake today to see if he can teach us a little bit about how to prevent that. So as always, Dr. DeCesar, we're going to start with your background. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about your medical training and then what specifically drew you to sports medicine?
Sure, Jen. So as you know, I'm originally from Penn Township, and I went to medical school at LECOM, did residency at UPMC St. Margaret, and then did fellowship training in sports medicine at Allegheny Health Network. What drew me to sports medicine, actually, when I was first training, I didn't know sports medicine existed. I was drawn to doing something where I could help the body help itself. I was actually interested in possibly becoming a chiropractor even, which is why I went to osteopathic school specifically, so I could learn some hands-on treatment to help people. And I discovered sports medicine, which was a new practice at the time, where doctors were using ultrasound imaging for diagnosis. They were doing regenerative type treatments like PRP and prolotherapy to treat injuries, even overuse injuries. And it just seemed like a great fit. You work in an orthopedic department, you see lots of different types of injuries, and you help people to get better.
That is fantastic. And did you play a lot of sports growing up? And did you ever have any injuries or anything like that?
I never had to have any surgeries or anything like that. I didn't really play a lot of sports. I played some football. I did baseball when I was really young. I did cross country and track. Later in life, I got really into racquetball. And actually, in the last couple of years, even though I never knew how to ice skate or play ice hockey, I've been playing ice hockey for 3 years because all my kids do, which has been a real thrill learning how to do that as an adult.
Well, you got to be careful too. So I guess they probably love having you on the sidelines. The parents probably love having you there just in case something happens.
I do have to do that every now and then. That is
I
true.
Believe it. I believe mm-hmm. it. I believe it. So, so you come out of school and I think at first, do you train to be a primary care physician and then specialty medicine is sports medicine, right? Like there's a track that you follow.
Correct. That's right. Although at the time I wasn't really aware that that track existed because there weren't many programs in the country. I decided to do a rotation over at Allegheny, and the first person I met was Ed Snell, and I introduced myself and he said, "Oh, I know exactly who you are." And I said, "You do?" And it turned out he took care of my grandmother, and I do remember him. And he was at the time a team physician for the Pirates and also the team physician for all of Major League Baseball. So it was a great program. They were very innovative at the time. Not every sports medicine program back then was doing was even using an ultrasound, which is standard now, or doing regenerative injection therapy, which is standard now. They were the first in the country to be doing it.
Wow. And so that was really where you learned a lot and said, this is definitely what I want to do. So you come out of school, you've completed your training, and then you go into the workforce, and you now have how many practices? Is it mainly Greensburg, or do you travel at all?
Yeah. So as you know, I was with Accella Orthopedics for 10 years. Which I guess is independence now. And then I've been independent myself, not independence, but, in my own practice for over 5 years. And I see patients on Pellis Road, and I go to Mount Pleasant also twice a month, and sometimes I go to Estique as well to do some procedures. But still, all Westmoreland County based.
Right. So I know it's, you see the whole gamut, but in your experience, because we're talking about the fall sports season and kids going back into sports full force, maybe having been off for a few months or a few weeks, tell us about maybe the top few or top five, top six sports injuries you see this time of year.
Yes, so when they're getting back into training, into camp, that sort of thing, I would say the most common things that I see are sprains, strains. Ankles probably being number one, knee, MCL probably being number two, or even ACL. Then you start to see the overuse injuries like shin splints. And Osgood-Schlatter disease, which is a growth plate injury. During the season, you might see some contact injuries like AC separations or shoulder dislocations. Obviously, concussions happen all the way through, but I, in particular, don't take care of concussions. I would say that those are the most common injuries that I see this time of year.
Awesome. Okay, so when you they come in like this, you know, the kids are in pain, the parents are worried. It's usually the beginning or middle of the sports season. Tell us how you take them through the diagnosis process, particularly with those sprains and strains, to make sure it's not something more than that.
So typically, it's going to depend on their age range because it's going to depend on whether they have a growth plate still or not. Because your weakest link is the growth plate. So the younger you are, the more likely it's actually a growth plate injury as opposed to being the ligament or tendon that's attached to the growth plate. You kind of have to go through what it was like for them when the injury occurred. For example, if they were able to put any weight on, their ankle at all, or if they were able to walk off the field on their own. You have to kind of go through how frequently they have symptoms, such as, is it all day, every day, and keeps them up at night? Or, if they do their activity, do they have pain initially, then it goes away, but then it comes back afterwards, but they feel better by the morning. Those are all things that kind of clue you into where you are in this process. With the growth plate injuries, what a lot of people don't want to hear is that the only thing that makes it better is avoiding the thing that hurts, which is usually whatever their sport is. With the actual sprains or strains, that implies that the growth plate is now closed and the weakest link is the tendon. A lot of times you can play through those if you're actually able to function. I mean, you're not worth very much if you can't sprint, for example. Those are things where we use some of the regenerative techniques or physical therapy, bracing, that sort of thing. But it takes a lot of time getting the history with the patient, but also with the parent. The other thing we're also looking at is, what they're doing outside of the sport, because, a lot of these, growth plate injuries are actually overuse injuries, and you have to determine if they're doing too much to begin with.
So you talk about overuse, but isn't there an element of preparation for the fall sports season that could possibly ward off some of these injuries? What would you say about conditioning, strength training, weightlifting? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so that's true. Interestingly enough, though, sometimes people who use personal trainers, or they're doing CrossFit at the same time, let's say, and they're trying to prepare themselves with strength training and conditioning, it depending on your age, that may actually cause and can be a risk factor, actually, for overuse injuries. So, in
Interesting.
general, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say interesting. So it can kind of make it worse sometimes, depending on the age.
It is a risk factor. That's correct. But, these athletes need to be doing aerobic exercise. That could be an exercise bike, that could be running, that could be using a treadmill where you're getting your heart rate up to 60% to 80% of your max. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to use the aerobic pathway to get oxygen to your muscles. And that takes a bit of time to develop. So that's where the aerobic conditioning comes in, because you're going to enter a sport where you're going to be doing something, consistently for an hour straight, and you have to depend on the oxygen you're getting into your lungs to properly get to your muscle tissue in order to do that. And that's what aerobic training means. So that's one thing. The other thing is that you're going to be doing a sport where you'll be in situations that you wouldn't be in your activities of daily living, where you're falling off to the side and you have to catch yourself, for example. And that's proprioceptive ability, where you're training your nerves, sending information to your brain so that you know where to apply the forces so you don't fall over and so you stay balanced. And that's where, neuromuscular training comes in, where, doing your cones and agilities and things like that are helpful. So you have to train, your body to be able to do those things, and that's what prevents injury. When you overtrain, however, you could actually, like we said, that can be a risk factor for overuse injuries if you're doing your sport with your coach, and on top of that, you're doing some extra work with a trainer on your own. In general, the rule of thumb is that you can do an hour per your age per week. So if you're a 12-year-old, you can do 12 hours of, whatever your activity is per week. You start getting over that, you start getting at risk for overuse. So if you're, that's why we, like I always sit down and when I'm writing out, I'm doing my notes with the patient and the parent, usually I have like a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday on there. And I'll say, okay, tell me, 2 weeks ago, what'd you do on Monday? What'd you do on Tuesday? You'd be really surprised how many times people were doing some things twice a day, every day, And when they see it all written out like that, and I'm able to count it up in my head, I'll say, hey, she's 12, but she's doing like 22 hours a week of this. And, this could be problematic.
I wonder who you've had that
Yeah,
conversation
I
with.
wonder.
Yes, you treated my daughter at the time was 9 with the over. It was overuse of the knee. That's what it was. But I think hearing it from you helped us, and we did cut her back to one team at that time, and healed perfectly, and she's moved on in cheerleading very well. So we appreciate that.
He
Because
sure
it's
is.
scary when you think there's a serious injury to your child.
Well, I mean, it's debilitating, that's for sure. But the good news is that you can get it under control with, some modifications and relative rest, as we call it. The other recommendation that's been well established, this will shock you, but I bet you've heard this before, is you're supposed to take 3 months off a year from your sport. Almost nobody does that, including yours truly with my kids. They're in hockey year round. They never take 3 months off from it.
No, we used to though. When we were kids, we did that. Summers were off, right? And not anymore.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So
Yep, I
everyone's
know
got a
that.
camp, everybody's got, and it's just nobody takes the 3 months off,
So, I know you're not a concussion specialist. It's not what you deal with, but I'm sure that people come in and you're probably recognizing the signs and symptoms of concussions, particularly in kids, particularly in fall sports. So, why don't you just generally tell parents at home who are listening What should they be looking out for? If your kid gets clocked in football or a baseball comes at him or a softball at her, what should they be looking for that would prompt them to seek medical care?
Yeah, so this has become a lot simpler over time, because it used to be, when I first started, they were still doing the mild, moderate, severe, and they would send some of these kids back in. And now all that's changed. Now if you have any of the symptoms, you're just out, period. Okay. And I did a lot of sideline coverage, right? Because I had to do it with Allegheny, and then I did it for 10 years or whatever with Exela, mainly for football. And obviously the first thing that you see after a hit, let's say, is the player may complain of a headache. But the other thing is, and if you listen to the coaches, sometimes they'll even mention, hey, he just doesn't look right. And that's true. They look off balance. They look like they don't know where they're going. They just don't seem like themselves, So if you're a parent and your kid doesn't look like your usual kid, then they should be coming out. If they complain of a headache at all, they should come out. Now, parents, in my experience around here, have been very reasonable. I mean, I remember even being at Penn Trafford in the playoffs, and the one kid came out, and the dad came up to me and said, "Hey, if he has anything at all, I don't want him playing." And I thought, okay, I was worried he was going to say the opposite, But the parents around here they're hip to this stuff. They're reasonable. If the kid does play, he's probably not going to be able to perform as well as he or she was previously, and is at risk for the second impact injury, or just at higher risk for injury because they're off balance anyway. They don't have the ability to balance themselves as well. And you see that on the sideline. That's the test that you're doing. You're testing to see what their balance looks like. If they can stand on one foot, if they can tandem walk, besides the questions you might ask them about what period it is, or what day it is, that sort of thing. The other thing that they'll get sometimes is they'll become nauseous. They may even vomit. They'll feel sometimes just like emotional for no reason, or they'll be, hypersomnolent, where they're excessively tired, or where they can't sleep. All kinds of emotional things that probably, 20 or 30 years ago, people thought that meant you were a baby or something,
And now we know it's a serious headache.
But those are all concussion symptoms, and they're very real.
For sure. And so much advancement in medicine. With the way we treat, with the way we diagnose. And same thing with a lot of sports medicine. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some of those advancements and innovations in sports medicine. And also, we're going to talk about balancing activities to avoid burnout as you move forward in the fall sports season. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Joining me today is Dr. Jacob DeCesar from DeCesar Orthopedic Medicine. He's a wonderful sports medicine physician who sees patients in Greensburg and Mount Pleasant. Grew up in Westmoreland County and is now treating patients here. And a big population of his patients is teenagers who are heading back into the sports season this fall. So I thought it would be a good idea to bring him back on the show. He's been on several times before, but I think it's always a good debrief for parents before they're heading back into the sports season. And with so many kids involved in multiple sports playing year-round, you've got to balance those activities. You've got to avoid burnout. You've got to avoid overuse. You were talking about the 3 month off rule, right? 3 months off from your
Yes.
sport and how unlikely that is in this day and age. So if you're not taking 3 months off, should it be at least a couple days a week where you're resting? Should it be, making sure you take a vacation? Or is it really doing multiple sports in the same day that can get tricky?
Well, I mean, you could do another sport in the 3 month period if you took that off from, let's say, we're hockey people, right? So if my kids did something else completely for 3 months, but no one's doing that either, where everybody is going year round. But yes, besides the physical demand, and the overuse stuff, there is a mental component. There is the possibility of overtraining and burnout, where you see this especially like in swimmers and stuff where their times actually get worse, and there's no reason that should be happening. And sometimes that is actually a psychological thing that is cured by taking time off. And some of those patients, I haven't had a whole lot of those, but they're forced to have to stay out for months, or else they just can't improve those times,
Wow.
Yeah. So yes, I think that if you go on a vacation, and at least if you spend, 2 or 3 weeks away from the rink, sometimes they go back and somehow they have a different perspective, and they're even a little bit smarter somehow, or better than they were previously. And that's what the proponents say about the 3 month off thing, is that they're actually better when they get back for having been out. Mm-hmm. They have a different perspective on the sport or a different understanding. Yeah. So it's not even just staying out of it so that you don't get an overuse injury. It's the mental part of that too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think even if you took 2 weeks off, you went on vacation or something and come back, that can be helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Good advice for sure. So many innovations, advancements in medicine that we've seen, even in your career. Why don't you talk about maybe the three or four things that have really wowed you and been able to help you either diagnose or treat with these advancements in medicine? Go ahead and talk about that.
Yes. So like we touched on a bit, ultrasound imaging has improved significantly over the last 20 years. I mean, even when I was in training, what we had that was the best looking imaging is like, looks like Atari now compared to what ultrasounds can do.
Good analogy. I like that.
Yes. Honestly, it is. Yes, you can diagnose, partial tears if something's inflammatory versus non-inflammatory. Sometimes you can even diagnose a fracture like I had someone whose rib x-rays were normal, but I could clearly see the fracture line and displacement with the ultrasound probe, because guess what? Part of it is, you're examining while you're doing it. So they call that sonopalpation. If you push down with the ultrasound and you can see something's painful, when you're doing an x-ray, you can't do that, right? I mean, you can't focus on the area that hurts and say, I'm going to evaluate this spot here in particular and see what's there. So I think that has really revolutionized the direction that you can take treatment, and being able to see like, hey, your patellar tendon has this big ball of, partially torn tissue and unhealthy tendon. This is what we need to go after here, and this correlates with your pain. I think that's one major thing that's happened, and you can see that physicians all over the place now are being trained to use ultrasound in our field. Even, the orthopedic surgeons are being trained to do it. Now, most of them can't do it once they get out because they're too busy doing their surgeries to be able to sit in an office and and use an ultrasound. But, still, they have an understanding of it now. It used to be if I showed an orthopedic surgeon an ultrasound image, they had no idea what they were looking at. Now, at least since they're trained on it, they know what they're looking at with it. As far as treatments, as you know, I commonly will use platelet-rich plasma injections, prolotherapy injections. I also use EPAT, which is a shockwave machine that is excellent for tendinopathies and strains that doesn't involve needles, because you know no one likes needles, but especially kids, except cheerleaders and gymnasts. They don't care. They'll do whatever it takes.
I don't know. I'll have to see. Yeah, I guess they will, though. They're just driven. They got to get the pain away, right?
Yeah, they're a different breed, you know. Certain sports, they're a bit of a different breed. Yes, so things that were able to help the body help itself, as opposed to just saying, well, go home and rest this and put some ice on it, you know. These are things that in the case of platelet-rich plasma or prolotherapy, where we are actually inducing your body's own inflammatory response to grow tissue that's healthier, more organized, and stronger. We grew up learning that inflammation is bad. Ibuprofen did a great job advertising and saying that they're fighting inflammation with these medications. But your inflammatory response is actually how your body makes tissue to heal from, you know, an ankle sprain. So, you know, with an ankle sprain, the ligament that holds one bone to another pulls apart, and then you get this ball of tissue that comes in, which is what inflammation is, to make it so that it can bring those pulled apart tissue back together so it functions again. And, you know, if you take ibuprofen in those first few days, you're actually hindering that process. There are studies that show that you actually shouldn't take that in the first couple of days. You can take it once that process has started. But in the first few days, you should let your inflammatory response do its job. And with PRP and prolotherapy, it essentially gives you a second chance at inducing that inflammatory response strategically in the injured tissue to make it stronger faster.
And can you maybe explain to people if they would have an injury that would require prolotherapy, you come in, you do the diagnosis, and then is it one treatment? Is it multiple treatments? Could you talk about that?
Yes. So first of all, I should say that with prolotherapy, PRP is platelet-rich plasma. You come in, you get a blood draw, we spin it in a centrifuge, you have concentrated platelets. Platelets are part of your blood that actually release growth factors. And we inject that into the injured tendon or ligament. And it actually causes increased pain at first and stiffness by design. And through the recovery process from that and making better tissue, you feel better. So, you know, it could take 6 weeks to get a good response, for example. Prolotherapy is where we're also injecting with the intention of causing the inflammatory response. But in this case, what we're actually injecting is a concentration of dextrose. So dextrose is just a form of sugar, right? And this is confusing to some people, because even doctors will say, well, what does an injection of sugar do? But it's not the sugar itself. It's the fact that the sugar is in a higher concentration than what's in your cells.
Okay.
So the needle itself going into, you know, the injured tendon or ligament induces an inflammatory response. But also when you inject this dextrose solution, it's concentrated dextrose, it causes the cells to break open and spill their growth factors. It induces an inflammatory response. It does a few other things too, where it's able to kind of like break up the tissue that's been walled off so that your body can reabsorb it. It also, the fluid itself can sometimes take pressure off of crushed nerves and things. So it does a couple other things, but it induces the inflammatory response by, like I said, the fact that it's in a higher concentration than your cells.
Right.
So that process, it's kind of like doing two prolotherapy treatments is like doing one PRP. So usually we bring the athlete in back to back, maybe 3 weeks apart, and then monitor them 6 weeks after the second treatment, depending on what we're doing. That tends to work better for smaller structures as opposed to the PRP we use for big tendons or tendons that have an injury in the middle of the tendon instead of where it inserts.
This is so such interesting stuff. So can you tell people at home again, where are your offices? How can they make an appointment with you? What's the phone number? What's the website? What's the Facebook page? Can you go through all that?
I think so. Yes. So I am at 700 Pellets Road in Greensburg. So towards the bottom of the hill. I also go to 599 North Church Street in Mount Pleasant, twice a month. Our phone number follows us everywhere. It's 724-261-4080, 724-261-4080. And my website is called, greensburgortho.com. I tried to make it simple because I know no one will be able to spell my name. So greensburgortho.com. It has a lot of information on there. Not only about where we are, but what I do and information about these different treatments. And I do have a Facebook page. I'm not even sure what it's called or how, if you search DeCesar Orthopedic Medicine, it'll come up. I can tell you
that. Yep. That's perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Jacob DeCesar. We appreciate so much your time talking about the fall sports injuries, preventions. We talked about advancements in both diagnosis and treatment. It's been wonderful to talk to you. I hope you have a nice end of the summer and start of the fall season, and hopefully you're not too busy. We thank all of you out there for listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB.